You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting.
Good evening. You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting at renegadebroadcasting.com. The current time is 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that's October 2nd, 2017. I'm your host, Richard Kadokevich, and this is Arcane Semantics. I only had my debut show last Monday, so I just want to say that I'm very happy to everyone at Renegade that I've been allowed to join and contribute here. I'm still getting settled in a bit here, but I do very much look forward to the future. We didn't manage to take in any calls in the past so far, so I would like to just mention that early on for this broadcast. Anyone who would be interested, I'd love to hear from someone tonight. We had a lot of interesting events recently. I was going to talk about some of them here, but, well, it could be good to have someone else's opinion as well, just have more than one mind working on analyzing some of these things. So, I don't know, any of you gentlemen or ladies out there, anyone who's a regular, perhaps someone who's frequently in chat or in comments sections as well, if you'd like, please join me during the evening tonight. And if you need that call-in number, that'll be 747-999-6407. That number again, 747-999-6407. Well, it's been quite an interesting week and weekend for that matter. One thing that has just really taken me aback a bit was this whole situation in Catalan, this whole Catalan independence vote. I really wanted to bring that up first and foremost because a lot of what we're trying to do here is look toward a new era. We talk about all of the strategies, could be good or to our detriment to employ. We discuss a lot of potential political systems, past, present, toward the future, all of these sort of things. And you know, this is an example of one of those defining moments, you know, and I'm just stunned by how openly oppressive the authorities have been in this situation in Catalan. We had the Spanish police using brutal force to throw out people trying to vote. You know, all they were trying to do is vote for independence of Catalonia. And, you know, it turns out the results were 90.09%. Okay. So basically 90% in favor of Catalan independence. And we've been told the Spanish citizens have already drawn up a declaration of independence. You know, a lot of these confrontations actually wound up coming down to the Catalan police versus the Spanish police that were trying to support the establishment. But the local Catalan police, you know, by the time everything was said and done, were siding with the citizens, as they should. Those are the people there to serve and protect, as it were. I was very impressed by that, because that just shows how close to civil war it can be. You know, very disconcerting, but also very exhilarating because of the potential for positive change in moments like these in any country. Now, the Catalan government, I mean, this situation, we got some of these statistics coming in. They keep getting updated. I apologize, some of these may be from, you know, late morning, early afternoon where I was here. 337 injured by Spanish police violence during the referendum. Catalonia's government says 337 have been injured, some seriously, during a police crackdown on the independence referendum this Sunday. So just yesterday when this went down, when this occurred. 9 police officers and 2 members of the Guardia Civil have been injured in the disorder, according to the Spanish Interior Ministry. The voting has been marred by a brutal police crackdown in which several instances of violence against voters have been recorded. Videos shows police dragging voters from polling stations by their hair, unprovoked attacks, protesters, and Spanish police attacking Catalan firefighters. Yeah, that's right. The firefighters were the first to step up in many instances on the side of the citizens who were just trying to get in their vote. There have been several calls for Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy to resign over the police response from Catalan politicians and opposition MPs. Not European anymore. Furious Catalans slam EU for silence over police violence in Spain. Catalonia is a critical contributor to the Spanish economy. It accounts for 20% of the nation's GDP. If it became independent, the region would no longer be part of the EU and could potentially unleash a major financial crisis across Spain. But the EU has remained tight-lipped amid fury. The bloc should condemn Madrid, but the voters were left livid, as one report states, asking Jean-Claude Juncker, European Commission president, why he was keeping quiet. One man wrote on Twitter, "What has Tusk Juncker said? I can't believe the silence from the EU on this. Disappointment doesn't come close." John Michael Murray said, Prediction: Catalan within 48 hours announces independence. Bigger headache for the EU than Brexit. Others will no longer see themselves as European. This also states, so it's just, yeah, very much is all about who's propping up who, you know, very much why the EU would be so concerned if, say, Germany or England were to no longer be financially supportive. It looks like we have a caller on the line here. Ryan, hello. Thank you for joining Arcane Semantics here. You're actually the first caller ever. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hello. I'm just listening. Just playing games on my Xbox and listening.
Oh, okay. All right. Sounds great. No problem.
Okay.
If you just want to mute yourself, and then if you have anything to say, feel free to chime in. Okay, well, moving on here with the situation over there regarding the firefighters. Now, the firefighters blocked the Spanish police from the voters. Catalan firefighters stood in front of voters in the face of Spanish police during ugly scenes in the region. Voters can be seen arms raised as the firefighters and high vis formed a line in front of them. In the footage posted on Twitter, the firefighters arm in arm move and walk toward the police who raised shields and holding batons. You know, it was quite a scene. You know, I've caught some of this video footage at the polling stations as well, and I was rather shocked, to be honest. You know, the way these people are being treated by police in riot gear, just trying to cast a vote, which is their right. But back to this take regarding the firefighters, it comes as police fired grenades and rubber bullets as voters who had been seen bleeding in the streets as violence breaks out across Barcelona. And goes on to mention the latest figures injured and that sort of thing. I was getting quite a few sources here and checking out quite a few of the videos. I would recommend you check out some of that footage yourself. You know, it just shows the sort of tyranny, you know, this new world order would like to have. Catalan has actually revived Scotland's referendum. You know, it's inspired those people to hold a new referendum. So this is the kind of information we need to go viral, you know, and sort of momentum and inspiration. You know, we need that energy, and it can multiply considerably. Now, talking about how close it is to civil war, I mentioned the Catalan police facing off against the Spanish police. Catalan local police actually, in the end, deciding to uphold and defend the rights of the locals, which is brilliant, you know. I mean, we need so much more of that. Hundreds have been hurt. You know, we've been reporting a little of the numbers there, but it's going to keep varying. And, I think it just shows, you know, what sort of things we may continue to face in a lot of our countries here. But always looking toward a better future. You know, these people would not be doing any of this if they felt hopeless, you know. And of course, intent, as we've been discussing a lot lately on this network, is a far better term. You know, forget the term hope. You know, we intend to better our people and to rise like a phoenix from the ashes as the white race. So, we need to inspire each other across these nation states as well in that regard, I think, because, you know, this is the nationalist spirit at work, I think, there in Catalan, you know. It wasn't going to be a bunch of economic migrants engaging in any of this abuse just to try to vote. I can, you know, can be sure of that without having to double check. And yeah, the video footage is, well, it speaks for itself, you know. Yeah, that's a situation worth mentioning most, I'd say, overseas in Europe. Regarding this past weekend, that was Sunday, as I said, the actual vote. Now, over here, it's not been all that pleasant. We've had a situation I'm sure many have heard about in Las Vegas, Nevada. A country music concert had a machine gun sniper. He was shooting from the window of a hotel, the 32nd floor, I believe that is, and a casino hotel, opening fire on the people. Initially, there were some social media sources where Islamic State was trying to claim responsibility, or someone, you know, posing as ISIS, saying the perpetrator was a soldier who had converted to Islam months ago, without providing any evidence to support this claim. And, you know, since then, we've already now had the FBI themselves, not that you can trust their word for anything, but they're out there saying the gunman has no connection to ISIS or any terrorist group. There's no evidence, they're saying, and everyone can see there's no evidence to link the shooter to ISIS. But yeah, I'm just trying to dispel some of the myths initially here. He used a high-capacity drum magazine. Now, it was counted 90 shot approximation. Many are saying presumably, and if you were to presume an AR-style rifle was used, this suggests either a snail drum or dual drum type magazine that was used in the murder. That's what was being said in one account. And then we've had another more knowledgeable of firearms pointing out they disagree with that. And the AR-15's effective range is only 200 yards with standard 0.223 ammo. Now, with military ammo, it can stretch to the 400 yards needed to reach from the Mandalay Bay Hotel to the concert venue. But when you listen to the automatic fire captured on the video, this firearms, I don't know about exit expert, but enthusiast states, the rate of fire strikes me as too slow to be a modified AR-15. Also, at rapid fire, the gas tube will melt around 20 to 30 rounds. AR-15 is not designed to be used as a machine gun. And of course, with a lot of extra work, removing a lot of pieces, you could convert it, not the standard way, but excess effort. Point being that, I mean, you know, this was clearly based on the rapid fire, a type of firearm that is already illegal, okay? That's the point, okay? Yeah, so when you listen to that footage, the speed of which the weapon is being fired, that is definitely already an illegal weapon because, you know, wait for it, and it's already begun. The gun grabbers are jumping all over this one, but it's really a non-issue, because, yeah, you know, these are... This is something that, as I say, is already illegal. There's no need to try to target other weapons, but they'll do that anyway. And yeah, we've already been seeing a bit of that. Now the police are claiming, okay, that the gunman had 10 rifles in his room at the hotel there. And first it was being presented as if they had killed the perp entering the room. Then later it pointed out he was dead when they had arrived there. This is just so full of holes already. Okay, you don't have to be someone who focuses exclusively on, you know, these sort of incidents in this case, actually, to get much of a clue. It's already falling apart with the people analyzing it, and you know, this has barely occurred. But you know, we're all getting better and better at this and helping each other. That's really what we need to do. Now, just to go over some of the suspicious facts here regarding this shooting incident. Excuse me. Sorry, folks, just clearing my throat there. Some of the suspicious facts include when the shooting started, all the exits were blocked. All right. And so at the event, it's very suspect that, you know, anyone who might want to suddenly leave the concert for whatever reason was not able to from any of the exits, the time period when this shooting occurred. And of course, that led to people by the exit unable to get out, people trying to stampede through them, behind them, just how it always goes in a panic situation. You can imagine people further back wouldn't even know the exits are blocked and would just be getting angry and, you know, rudely pushing through more and more people. Yeah, a lot of injuries, of course, on top of the deaths from the fire storm, as it were, occurred just simply due to that. Very suspect. I don't see why at any point during such a large event. I mean, come on, there are fire codes, all this sort of thing. And even for outdoor events, there's just, you know, for large capacity venues, there are rules for emergency situations. You know, it doesn't have to be something with a roof that could, you know, and walls that could catch on fire for those to be rules where you don't just have a, yeah, all these concert goers locked up at any point. That alone should be enough to raise a lot of suspicion for people to investigate further. The audience had been thoroughly lit up with show lighting during the moments leading up to and during the incident. Now, this is a concert, okay? The action's on the stage. You know, we all know that. Yeah, that's where the lighting is always going to be focused. You know, you're not going to just see a bunch of focus normally at any sort of event, concert, whatever, where the lighting is just going to be, you concentrated largely on the crowd at any point. That's not what's going on. You know, it might just turn on overheads when people are entering or exiting before or after. That's about it. So that's just very, very suspect as well. You know, the people controlling the lighting, ensuring to direct all the lights brightly illuminating the crowd, making the shooter's job, you know, that much more easy to be efficient. I really don't get that one. So that just shows that the, you know, the technical staff that night were in on it. Now, we had early warnings. This is interesting as well. We had early warnings from a Hispanic couple, all right? Primarily, though, the female. Some reports are referring to her as a mystery woman. Now, this Hispanic couple, primarily the woman, 45 minutes before the shots were fired in Las Vegas, were going around warning, you know, a bunch of people are going to die, a bunch of people are going to get killed, this sort of thing. And everyone just ignored her. I thought she was crazy, you know. Earlier today, someone pointed out on a news program, it was actually a similar event. They recalled regarding the Kennedy assassination that someone had mentioned in advance. And everyone brushed it off as a crazy person. So I don't know where this woman got this information, but, you know, yeah, she was out there trying to stop it. So just like so many other events where people knew ahead of time, and we've been discussing some of those lately on Renegade, I've noticed very interesting comments sections, for that matter, lately. But anyway, we had these early warnings from this woman. So, you know, this really sounds more and more like it wasn't some lone gunman, like the narrative they always try to present to us. People a lot knew about this, you know. I mean, exits being blocked, the lighting crew being aware, this Hispanic couple being aware. Now, two hotel rooms, it seems, were actually somewhat incorporated in this, because there have been photos which show broken glass and things in a disorderly fashion after the event, from the press who were able to get photos out, which showed two rooms next to each other, which both had been a crime scene, basically, including the broken glass and the broken windows, that sort of thing. So that's another hole in the story. You know, it's been trying to be presented that this one individual with these all this weaponry, by himself in one room. Well, not exactly. Now, regarding all the weaponry, we'll be right back.
Again.
After getting censored relentlessly on YouTube, with video after video and channel after channel getting taken down, we have decided to try a different approach.
We now have RenegadeVids.com, which features all the documentaries, parodies, compilations, sketches, and video discussions that are simply too accurate for the kosher censors.
There are now many hours worth of hard-hitting videos waiting for you to watch and share. So get on over to RenegadeVids.com.
Looks like we are all back. And I was just about to... Hello, folks. Looks like we are back. Starting a bit early there. I have to get used to the breaks in my clock on my computer. Synced a bit better here, but we were mentioning all of the weaponry regarding this Las Vegas shooting incident. And now the police, once again, we can't take their word for anything, you know, but nonetheless, if you know, just to analyze this official story, they're claiming 10 long guns were actually in the room when this individual was discovered, and ultimately it's been reported he was already dead when they entered the room. Now, you have to pass through, if you've ever been to a Vegas hotel, you have to pass through a lot of the gaming areas, you know, a lot of the casino gambling areas just to get to the check-in. The point being, they want people to gamble and spend money there as much as possible before, during, and after their check-in time there, you know, their stay in general. So, this individual would have to pass by all of these casino gambling areas to get to the check-in with 10 long guns, even if they were, you know, and dismantled into parts. And now the second dimension of that is just how much these casinos invest in closed circuit camera systems. You know, I mean, there's going to be extensive recording in every area that person had a walkthrough, with plenty of opportunity for the individual to be identified if you put everything together. See, you know, when this person initially checked in. Turns out it was a couple days prior, like Thursday. All right. So, in addition, you also have to think about the hotel cleaning service, which is going to have come in a few times during the incident, during check-in and the incident a few days later. So, there should be ample witnesses, evidence, leads to go on. And then once again, of course, the dynamic of, you know, why this would be presented as something that it really was not. And well, I mentioned the gun grabber agenda. You know, that's part of it. I think it's also interesting that this was a country music festival in Las Vegas. It, you know, not Texas, but you know, close enough in the vicinity, it might as well have been. You know, just the whole idea of, you know, the West and country music. You know that crowd was virtually all white, you know, just about, if not all white, you know, for this individual to be opening fire. And we talked about how October nails it to the month, 100 years from the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. So, we've been bracing for this time period, and, you know, it, the first day of October, and already, you know, we've got this happening, and for that matter, overseas, you know, Catalan as well, but the gun grabbers are already using this in every way possible. Now, one person mentioned some interesting facts you might want to know about the alleged gunman, Stefan Paddock. And Stefan Paddock has been identified as the gunman who opened fire on concertgoers at the Route 91 Harvest Country Music Festival in Las Vegas on Sunday. And this goes on to mention, I mean, like I said, the count of individuals kept varying as it did with Catalan, it did with this event as news kept breaking. But according to this report, now leaving at least 58 people dead and an estimated 515 wounded in the deadliest mass shooting in modern U.S. history, police said. The shooter, a 64-year-old from Mesquite, Nevada, was firing from the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Hotel down at the festival, which was located in a fairgrounds area on Las Vegas Boulevard, hitting several concert goers. And this doesn't fit the profile whatsoever of these lone gunmen, by the way. 64 years old, you know. Officers responded to the hotel room and engaged the suspect, police said. And that was updated later, as I mentioned. And yeah, I'm drawing from quite a few sources. And, you know, we don't have any motive at any point that's been released from the police. You know, I'm sure our own conclusions will be more effective regardless. So it's just fine with me. But he doesn't have any ties to terrorist organizations. You know, it's really threw his family for a loop. You know, it turns out that he, you know, he wasn't on any psychiatric drugs or have any psychiatric abnormalities in his history. So, you know, that can be ruled out, which is something that people would question, you know, right away in these situations. And he hasn't had any past related to any activism, whether political or religious whatsoever. You know, his family were thrown for a loop here. Suspect's brother is quoted saying that he feels like an asteroid just fell on us. Well, yeah, I'm sure the family is, are, you know, are overwhelmed with media right now. And, you know, we've had quotes like, he was just a guy, something happened, he snapped. Brother says, dumbfounded at massacre, claiming family has no idea of a motive and this sort of thing. And I mentioned the gun grabbers here. We can't forget about them, right? Huffington Post reporter calls for gun control hours after the Las Vegas massacre. A Huffington Post political reporter called on Congress to enact more extensive gun control measures Monday as the death toll continues rising in Las Vegas. Recordings of the shooting prove a full auto machine gun was used. Those are already illegal, as I've pointed out. So, you know, I mean, you know, these people don't really even know most of the laws they're trying to alter. When incidents like this happens, we have a lot of reports of celebrities tweeting support for stricter gun control laws. And that's no surprise. You know, celebrities are in the back pocket of the establishment. Now, we've had a lot of so-called leftists. I cringe to use these kind of terms these days, you know, but you know, we've had a lot of quote-unquote leftists celebrating white Trump supporters, as they put it, being killed in Las Vegas, the Las Vegas massacre. It's pretty ridiculous, you know. A leftist teacher celebrated the horrific massacre in Las Vegas because many of the victims are likely to have been quote-unquote white Trump supporters. Being a country music festival in Las Vegas here. An anti-Trump activist with Twitter named Anne hashtag the resistance, who is also a teacher, reacted with the two of the deadliest mass shooting in American history. And that's what they're calling it. The deadliest mass shooting in American history in the corporate media. I mean, this just has all the hallmarks of, you know, engineered incident, you know. I hesitate to use the term false flag because people don't understand that that can be used to define many things. Some prefer a different term for some situations, you know, because sometimes people die and sometimes they don't. But yeah, engineered incident is maybe a good universal term for the, you know, just the sake of what I'm pointing out. But yeah, this Anne hashtag the resistance tweets, quote, lots of white Trump supporters in Las Vegas at Route 21 watching Jason Aldean. Pray only Trump tards died. Hashtag pray for Vegas, unquote. Now, I don't give a damn about Trump supporters, obviously. But, you know, the people who are saying this, you know, they're referring to white people. Okay, that's the point. And I think, you know, we can all around here understand what's really being implied with these sort of assertions. And gunmaker stocks have surged, for that matter, so far after the mass shooting in Las Vegas. Shares of gunmakers rallied Monday in the wake of what has been described as the deadliest mass shooting on U.S. soil. Smith & Wesson, parent American Outdoor Brands Corporation's stock, AOBC, went up a positive 4.64%, jumped to 0.3% in morning trade. Strum, Ruger & Company Inc. shares, RGR, plus 5.03%, climbed 3.7%, and Vista Outdoor Inc. shares, VSTO, positive 2.48%, rose 1.4%. A little heavy on the stats there, folks, sorry, but it's just, yeah, the point being that, you know, so many people out there can tell that this is going to be used for the gun-grabbing agenda. You know, even if there are multiple purposes that the creators of this had in mind. And, you know, there's no, of course, motive released. We can all draw our conclusions on that, but I just wanted to dispel some of the you know, myths that might be out there a bit, at least. You know, of course, though, you know, after ISIS, we had Antifa jump on the bandwagon. Vegas is only the beginning. Okay, this is one claim that we have. Antifa. So supposedly are being claimed in some capacities to be joining MS-13 and ISIS sympathizers. This was from, this article was Dave Hodges, the Common Sense Show. But now we had a report Antifa was planning massive attacks upon America in an attempt to start a civil war. And, you know, they go on to refer again to Antifa joining forces with ISIS and MS-13, you know, the Mexican drug cartel and Muslim Brotherhood and ISIS. Well, I know they love linking the term Muslim with ISIS. So that's mostly the Jews who do that. But I was told they go on what had been predicted months ago about a coming offensive style of attacks were taking place in the U.S. But yeah, Antifa is, you know, always these days quick to jump on the bandwagon. Not surprised that they're trying to take credit. They don't really deserve as much press, even, I think, as a lot of people give them. it's just ridiculous how much of a media darling and how much they can, you know, they can be and how much they can just totally avert prosecution. I was just checking out a video earlier, Antifa blocking a 101 freeway in downtown Los Angeles. Antifa blocked the 101 freeway in LA before holding up placards that read November 4, it begins. Okay, so some of them are propagating that on November 4th, something big is on the horizon. So yeah, October, November, we can expect anything and everything, basically, folks. And more reports on, they're just, Antifa's too much in the media these days, you know. There's one person who's claiming to represent them, quoted, "They won't know what hit them," in the video. Supposedly undercover footage, or they didn't know they were being filmed. And basically it was, well, you know, we don't need any evidence around here that Antifa's mission is very much central to violence as part of everything it does, basically. But we had, this supposed undercover footage where, you know, we had some individual talking about their violent resistance and their philosophies. Some of the footage, a lot of the footage of that one was actually a transgender woman. I don't know, she thinks he's a Antifa transgender Rambo or something, evidently. But purported leader of a small cell of Antifa protesters who can be heard telling Crowder's producer, that was the one who did the video, that she's armed with a handgun and that she expects reinforcements to arrive later with two AKs. And the organizer was also heard suggesting to the Crowder producer to buy a small blade at a military surplus store and strap it to their ankle just in case. These people are such trash. Waste your time with covering too much of them, but you know, these incidents are going on all over without any prosecution. You know, it's just more and more ridiculous that we have to put up with these double standards. We're seeing in other countries, I don't know how much I'll have time for before the break, but, it's a lot of upset in other nations as well. Ridiculous double standards, that some people aren't putting up with as easily anymore, though. And I like to think that, you know, we're some of those at the foreground of it. The resistance here in the States, in the U.S., let's try at Renegade and the people we can reach out to be an inspiration, and all of our brothers in Europe, you know, all of the European nations and in England, in the UK, let's try to give each other a lot more inspiration in just, you know, starting to organize more against these population displacement agendas. You know, because this is the biggest issue. If anyone tries to give you any problems with being a white nationalist or whatever word, you know, being racially conscious, being, you know, racially aware, national socialist, nationalist, any term, anyone who's similar to our values and listens in here has. Be proud, you know. You have to take the narrative and make it your own. You know, when these people try to put you on the defensive, you always want to turn it around instantly. Be on the offensive, and don't act like you've done anything you know, that you don't, I mean, know that what you don't believe you're guilty of, make that shown outwardly to people, you know. Let them know you don't feel that you're guilty of anything, and you know you're the one who's righteous, basically. So, you know, we can use our language very much as a powerful spell invoking tool to control the narrative, you know, toss it right back at them, deflect it right back at them, and go on the offensive, you know, in a well-calculated way, of course. You know, I mean, that's a danger too, is, you know, you don't want to go on the offensive in a way that just does more harm than good. We can all learn from, you know, situations our brothers have had in the past. A lot we wish would be different in their demeanor and choice of language, a lot of subtleties, you know. But I think we can all just, you know, keep each other in a positive light. Don't allow any dividing and conquering. Let's try to, you know, try to be patient, even with a lot of those who are misguided among our race. We do want to bring them around eventually. We understand there's a lot of social conditioning, mind washing, mind control, sort of manipulation, you know. There's just social engineering all around us, and the schools and the entertainment industry and politics and everything. So, I mean, in social media, you know, that's, it's a blessing and a curse. So we have to, yeah, we have to weigh everything, and definitely not so much react as respond. To be just a good influence for our brothers, make everyone start looking better and making more headway and progress here. You know, I really. Yeah, I'm happy though when I see a little, you know, little changes where people get a little bolder, at least to take a stance against all of this. I was mentioning other countries. I could go a little into that, I guess, before the top of the hour. We had in Canada. Some African migrants terrorizing Canada, as it's been put. France has just days before that announced the EU planning to expand migrant programs. And I don't know, well, you know, some perspectives see that, you know, this is almost like a celebration, you know, by these people. Migrants from Somalia and North Africa have been identified as the likely perpetrators of terrorist attacks in Canada and France, were carried out just after the European Union Commission announced plans to import 50,000 more African migrants in the coming months. Additionally, both suspects... well, talking about the different incidents, of course, one of whom now deceased, were known to local authorities. So, you know, incidents in the past, you know, we see this a lot these days. The authorities don't report it, you know. The European authorities, here in America, we have similar situations as well. Yeah, you know, you get a free pass if you're, if you're an immigrant. The French attack, the primary French incident was interesting. It was some knife attacker shot by French soldiers shouting Allah Akbar, killed two in Marseille. Two people have been killed during a knife attack. It was a Marcel train station. And, it was just right around this announcement. I know the other incident, or at least one of the others, I mean, there were multiple incidents, they're saying, in both France and Canada, right around this EU announcement expanding the migrant program. But this one, I thought it was the Somalian, actually, a Somalian from an incident, hits a police car with his vehicle. Okay, so then he jumps out and stabs the officer to death, jumps over by that car, right after the incident, the hit happened, the impact. And before the officer, could do anything about it, had fatal wounds from the stabbing. And allegedly there was an ISIS flag, I think this is, in the car of the fleeing perpetrator. Now that part, it's what, for all we know, it is, it could very well be a Mossad trying to implicate the Muslim people for their agendas. It's really hard to say why. And then at the same time, of course, we know who's behind ISIS. At this point, you'd think they would want us to like ISIS, because, there's such an attempt at a grab for Syria right now, at the very least. I have this whole 1984 mentality about who's our friend and who's our enemies in this generation. Quite laughable. Oh, we should be having the break, though, coming up any second here. So, get to some of this.
Profits are really popular unless they create more profit. Eyes of the future seen from their past, from Big Bang to Wimber, and it all sounds the same. Oh.
You're not always at your computer, but that doesn't mean you need to stop listening to Renegade Broadcasting. A good way to catch our shows while you're on the go is by finding us on TuneIn Radio. There is an app for your iPhone or Android, TuneIn.com. There are also plenty of other ways to access the 24/7 stream right on the homepage at RenegadeBroadcasting.com. And that first button underneath the player is a direct link to our page on TuneIn Radio. Please remember to follow us and share with your friends.
They're making the last film. They say it's the best. And we'll help make it. It's called The Death of the West. The kids from fame will all be there. Free Coca-Cola for you. And all the monkeys from the zoo. Well, there'll be extras too. They're making the last film. They say it's the best. And we'll help make it. It's called The Death of the West. A star is rising in our northern sky, and on it we're crucified. A chain of gold is wrapped around this world. We're ruled by those who lie.
Renegade Broadcasting.
Welcome back, and this is the Monday, October 2nd, 2017 episode of Arcane Semantics, second broadcast, second hour here on Renegade Broadcasting. And please help out and support us here. You know, we are completely listener-supported at Renegade. More and more these days, even sponsors who do support independent media are getting more and more pressure, considerably, you know, increasing pressure from the establishment to no longer advertise on a lot of these platforms, even if they would do support us and would like to. So, you know, it's being harder and harder to get long-term or any good, consistent support from advertising and Renegade. I'm sure Kyle has dealt with that as much as any station has. Please, completely rely on the listeners to support us and to fight for the white race, you know, in a society that is so completely run by, a doctrine that is completely against us, completely controlled by the Jews in the establishment. And of course, the even the independent media, it's a jungle as far as navigating to, any sources that are not manipulated by these agendas. The Jewish people in general have a whole different set of values and principles, and this definitely pervades everything. That's a lot of what we're about here, is trying to recapture our stake on this planet, as the white race, able to represent ourselves once again, which we haven't very had much power to do at all in recent centuries, for that matter. You just look at the history and how even young people get their history from fiction. These days, they'll watch films, and it's so easy to manipulate the youth, make them think things are so different than they actually were and are, can be. But I'm trying to cover a lot of current events today regarding that balance, really. Meritocracy is a very recurring theme in a lot of these issues we're talking about today. You know, whether there is one or not and how it affects things, a meritocracy and that balance of independence and cohesion of a people's and of the individuals within it. I mean, just when I look at these stories from these other nations we're covering right now, that really, really hits home. You know, we need some of that balance. You know, that's one thing the Far East do have a good grasp. You know, that whole balancing of polar, what we perceive as polar opposites, but really are just, you know, things that measure and dictate spectrums for all of life. You know, the yin yang is an interesting, but it's not unique to their culture. The European folk peoples have understood these sort of concepts with their Gnostics since ancient times. In their own regard, I was talking about Canada and France and some of the migrant terrorist acts, basically, and then they coincided a lot with the EU announcing an expansion, no less, of the migrant program. This is just a population displacement. It's just that we have to let enough people know to have something be done about it before it's too late, is the way I see it, you know. And there are a lot out there who think we're too extreme, that renegade, or, you know, that we're too harsh on, you know, everyone and everything out there in ways. But I see it as, you know, a necessary step at this point to really invoke change before we run out of time. You know, I mean, there are all these patriot movement type networks, radio networks, for example, and media platforms out there. And you know, we can appreciate some of what they contribute. And on some topics, they can be, you know, thought of as, you know, brethren to us. But, you know, they're, if someone takes the approach they take, the safe approach to a lot of these issues, such as Jewish power, which is a big one, the survival of our people, you know, that nothing is going to happen in time, you know. So, yeah, you know, it's more than calling out Israel that's required. But I think, like I said, you know, we it's never too late to convert people into being more all on one side among our race. You know, so, you know, we don't want to put all our energy into attacking each other. Certainly, we need to really try to use constructive criticism and positive propaganda and persuasion, truth propaganda, just like Goebbels, you know, and persuasion just as much as we can, okay? A lot of other incidents, getting back to the reporting I was doing, I thought were worth mentioning in some other regions of the globe as well. Well, I mean, the U.S. policy, for example, on Afghanistan, it seems has been re-solidified with nothing new, you know, as it's put by Senator Corker, U.S. in Afghanistan for the next decade. The U.S. invaded Afghanistan, of course, in 2001. And so it has now been 16 years. And, you know, many are claiming that, you know, it was a record of sorts for this era in an occupation. You know, if that isn't comparable to Vietnam, from a Western point of view, a U.S. point of view, I don't know what is. But, President Trump committed to a continued war there with seemingly no end in sight just over a month ago. And, you know, we're still getting confirmations on that. North Korea, well, the U.S. had finally established direct communication with North Korea. Okay, we're talking about the executive branch here in the U.S. Finally established direct communication with North Korea. Okay, this was reported from Tillerson, and the Trump administration acknowledged on Saturday publicly for the first time. It was in direct communication with the government of North Korea over its missile and nuclear tests, seeing a possible way forward beyond the escalating threats of a military confrontation from both sides. All right, now that is, you know, that sounds positive there, but, well, as it unfolded, North Korea said they weren't interested in anything the U.S. government has to say. And, you know, it goes with territory, you know. I mean, making promises to nations that disarm, such as Libya, Iraq, Syria, Iran, then breaking these promises. You know, it's no wonder North Korea doesn't, you know, want to try to put any good faith in anything the U.S. might say, is really what the issue is, you know. Too little, too late, but it seems like an actual attempt at a communication. It doesn't seem like it was just, you know, what we're being fed to believe as much as it, you know, I mean, there are still some real conflicts that those in power can't completely decide every point along the course with these political leaders. So, you know, it was interesting how, then one day later, President Trump said yesterday, that his top diplomat, Tillerson, was wasting his time. It seems that, you know, this was just a way of saving face for Trump, basically. You know, he wanted to seem like he was making the decision not to to talk to North Korea with any negotiations. You know, and as long as the corporate media focuses on these points, it won't get out to many people. It'd be quite effective, but you know, that's not quite how it occurred there. So that's how it's being presented to the U.S. population, and you know, now we're being told Trump's readying a military strike on North Korea, that he's settled on a military solution, is how they're putting it. You know, it's not like we can't assume there's a lot of orchestrating you know, in the grand scheme between these countries. But we do see a resistance that may be genuine regarding the fact that you know, North Korea is one of the threats to the private central banks and their cult religion, as it were. Of course, I mean, I still, you know, am wary of these other countries, so-called superpowers outside of the Western sphere, as far as, you know, Judaic influence. You know, there are a lot of opinions regarding Russia, and that, and I really don't know enough about Iran to really make the call. I'd love for others more qualified than I to give their input. You know, the current regime, and then there's also, as I mentioned in previous weeks, the Iranian Renaissance movement, which is not Muslim. You know, to what extent those in power now and this other movement are or are not actually manipulated by Judaic powers and influence or not. Now, and then as far as China and India, well, you know, those are each unique from one another, and it's really not something I was going to get into today, but, you know, it always stands to question, just because you're against the West doesn't mean you don't have influence from these, this foreign pest of a race in the way the teachings of the ancient Jewish texts dictate, really. I mean, you know, the most superior, now supremacist doctrines, you know, when looking into the Talmud, even looking into Torah, you know, even the Old Testament, for that matter, many have cited, just, you know, delving into the mind of such a people. And, well, of course, the protocols of the learned elders of Zion as well. But yeah, no, China, India, I'd like more information to reserve judgment myself. I'm always curious to hear what others have to contribute on those countries and their foreign influence. North Korea seems to be just something that isn't surprising any of us. We see this with so many of these other countries. You know, I mentioned Libya a few minutes ago, and that's a good example. Iraq as well, really. And, well, regarding Israel, for that matter, you know, we have current statements. Hezbollah says Israel is pushing the region to war. At this point, the entire region there, you know, in the Middle East, Lebanon's Hezbollah accused Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday of pushing the region to war in Syria, Lebanon, and the Gaza Strip, and said nowhere in Israel would be safe if such a conflict were to erupt. So yeah, they are accusing, Hezbollah is definitely accusing Israel of trying to take things to the next level in a more unified fashion. You know, the amount that we've already seen shows no remorse regarding Israel and its land expansion motivations. You know, its treatment of, well, just how much it's taken over almost all of Palestine since it was created. The Golan Heights in Syria as well at the moment. You know, it's just stay there, occupy the area long enough if you're Israel, and then you can just call it part of Israel. That's pretty much how these people roll. You know, I mean, I don't focus too much on that part of the world. I like to focus more on the white countries. But when you're analyzing the mind of these people, when you're trying to get information out to others who don't fully support our cause among our people, or even other races who are not Jewish and who, you know, are all being used against each other rather than supporting their own live and let live nationalism, just as we do, you know, we should educate people, put your energy on where it's most worthy, though, for the most part. But yeah, so I don't want to go too much into Middle Eastern issues today. There was a lot of there were a lot of interesting economic stories lately. I was noticing, actually, I had some other comment on what we were talking about. Islam and well, the population displacement in Britain. We have UKIP, and they were a warning of overwhelming rise of Islam in the UK. burying British culture at an alarming rate. That's from the UKIP leader currently. So, yeah, that's another example of people pushing back that I did mean to get to a bit more, as I talked about in the first hour. And in Sweden, we had Antifa violence at a Nordic resistance demonstration in Sweden. Antifa shouting Allah Akbar. And we had Swedish citizens, native Swedes, attacking Antifa. Now, these Swedish people have been so conditioned to turn the other cheek, be polite to the point of, of being a masochist, basically. But, and, you know, they're starting to be fed up enough where they're, you know, they're resisting that conditioning, that social conditioning they've dealt with their whole lives, which is difficult when you've been through it to that degree for so many years already. So yeah, we have ordinary Swedes attacking Antifa, and just saying enough's enough, you know. That I'd like to see more of, you know, in the Nordic countries. You know, we need more resistance, you know, especially in places like Sweden and Denmark, where, you know, that Marxist social engineering has been so heavily installed for so long. As far as other countries and relations, before I move on here, I wanted to mention Russia regarding RT in the U.S. here. Looks like they have some issues. RT may have to close down their U.S.-based studio, we're hearing now. Now, as much as I am very wary, like when I was talking about Dugin and the National Bolshevik sort of influence on Russia, as much as I'm wary of them, you know, I mean, all countries should be able to still, you know, have their citizens access each other's news. I think that's just, you know, a good anti-New World Order, anti-globalist philosophy that we should all try to embrace, you know, and at least Russia does do that. And, you know, those countries I had been referring to earlier, such as Russia, in that regard at least, you know, is a little closer to where we want things to be heading. But, yeah, we had all indications so far showing that RT may indeed have to close their studios, and consequently the similar sort of situation will be done to U.S.-based studios in Russia should that occur. Russian airstrikes in Syria have killed 2,000 plus of ISIS in 11 days, reportedly. We just had in. And, you know, they're definitely making strides, Russia and Syria. And we see so much bailing out in key moments before getting wiped out of different areas of ISIS troops, you know, being rescued by U.S. and Mossad forces. It's just ridiculous. Anyone who, you know, keeps track of international media, for that matter, you know, can see how poorly the U.S. and Israel portray themselves. It's ridiculous how much influence they have as far as any international law could restrict Israel. It just shows that, you know, I don't know, we're up against may require a grassroots origin to finally overcome, you know, before we could get to the level of anything international to be done about the influence these people have. Let's see, I don't know what else, if any, there is to say. I probably bored you guys too much with, you know, international incidents and certainly war, because it's usually more of the same. I don't know. I am kind of disappointed, but not, like I said, surprised about the whole Korea thing. We have a lot of people who are just reluctant, you know. Ever since this whole Trump presidency started, to, you know, they don't want to admit that he's not some savior or something, and it's absurd how many people just cling for so long when you've seen someone not doing any of the things you hope they might, which was maybe unrealistic. Any of us who've researched since before he was elected, you know, a lot of us, you know, we're suspicious of the sort of Zionist control, potential puppeteering from Jewish power that Trump would ultimately display. Some people still insist that he's against Israel, for that matter, and that he just has to play his cards as best he can. Now, I think they're being too generous there. Even someone I was speaking to earlier this week, earlier today, a lot of people who are on our side, but, you know, are still in a lot of mindsets that are really taking a couple steps backward too often, rather than, you know, consistently going forward, I guess, is the best way to put it. As far as economic news worth pointing out, well, we had some very disappointing declarations from Trump on that recently, for that matter. But first, also, there was an interesting story here out of Investment Watch blog. It was bringing us back to... Oh, stick around, folks.
Nothing about South Africa in Western schools, other than that there was an evil apartheid government of white racists who oppressed everyone until the great Saint Nelson Mandela came along. Now you can learn the real history of exploration, conflict, concentration camps for the Boers, Jewish-funded black terrorism, Winnie Mandela and her necklacing, rampant murder and rape under the ANC, the so-called squatter camps, how the Rainbow Nation is a blueprint for what's to come for whites worldwide, and so much more. Between Heaven and Hell, The True Story of Whites in South Africa by Sinead McCarthy. Free to watch at whitesouthafrica.com.
Yeah.
folks, we're back for the last half hour of the show. Just really quickly, I wanted to reference this article out of Investment Watch blog regarding economic news. It's really a flashback of sorts. It's going back to the announcement of Rumsfeld the day before 9/11 of the $2.3 trillion that was missing. And, this article had an interesting thing or two to say, I thought, pointing out how, since then, it's actually, I'll just use their words here. Investment advisor Catherine Austin Fitz contends the deep state swamp creatures do not want to give the $21 trillion they have stolen over the last two decades back to we the people. So it's basically, it doesn't really go into detail until later in the article. I don't want to bore you with the details of how they get that number, that figure. But yeah, they estimate far more than $2.3 trillion. Actually, at this point, $21 trillion collectively has been stolen over the last two decades. And it's basically suggesting you want to preserve the Constitution because you want to have individual sovereignty, and you want your taxes to only go into things that have financial and national sovereignty. So that has to be restored. Now, the reason they want to tear up the Constitution is they don't want to give the money back. That's the legal mechanism that requires us to give and gives us the power to reverse this. They say we have $20 trillion in debt and there is no money. Very different policy discussion if I can say, wait a minute, there's $20 trillion in debt, but you stole $21 trillion. We're putting that back on the table for purposes of this policy discussion. And so we'd have $1 trillion left over, toward international spending for the nation is the way it's trying to think of it. And it just says some inspiring words also at the end when you think of the incident we've had, for example, with the confrontations with Catalan and Catalan police and Spanish police even up against each other. We're showing that we're that close to civil war in so many of these countries. This goes on to mention you don't need everyone to change this. It only takes 5% to 10% of the population to completely turn this around. That's what throughout history very often it does take in what actually happens. When you look at the history of the U.S. or various nations of Europe, it doesn't take everybody, and that is one of the things that has got them so scared. This goes on to say, we don't need to implode the federal government. We need to take it back, clean it up, and get it to run according to the law. I'd say we need to do more than that for our people. Though there's some wise words there we can convert to effectively serve our causes, basically, and a lot of that's a lot of what I think we should do is take the positive, leave the rest in some cases when we're getting good influence to redirect toward empowering our people and educating our people to get more on board here. I just thought I'd share that with you folks. And, I mentioned Trump and him not really looking good economically for the country right now. With that, I was referring to this. We have a tax, plan. Trump's tax plan is an act of political domination by the rich, is how this is being presented, by some of these independent sources. Goes on to mention why do so many people work 60-hour weeks for poverty wages? Well, a few, luxuriate in the fabulous returns of interest-bearing assets. Why are the citizens of Puerto Rico threatened by a deadly social collapse while the fruit of the island's labor is shipped to Wall Street bondholders. You know, it mentions for an example here. The answer surely cannot be that some wealthy members of our society are exercising political power over the lives and incomes of others. No, no, no one would do that. And certainly not the Jewish people. So don't you folks think that for a damn second. It goes on to say, we must consider growth, productivity, liquidity, gross domestic product, and the debt to GDP ratio. We need to be harder on quote unquote white collar economic criminals is the way I would put it. Okay. About the 25 points of National Socialism for the Third Reich. A couple weeks ago, I was mentioning the, you know, the new harder stance that Germany was taking at that time toward what they like to euphemize as quote unquote white collar economic criminals, and they're actually the worst kind, I would say. There's nothing white about their crimes. They affect far more energy, power, and can have far much more devastation collectively in what they all work toward, basically. You know, just like the whole concept of usury and the whole concept of corporations. Even the dangers of trade unions, which I didn't really get to talk about, but will more in the future, is something that definitely... the Third Reich was very, and Hitler was very much aware of, you know, and had good alternatives in that sense. These are all things we can learn from considerably. So we need to be hard on these economic criminals. I believe it was Vietnam. I heard of a recent incident, and, you know, these people get put to death there, okay, who are major economic criminals, banking criminals, and the like. We could use some of that here in the West. We really don't need theft to be treated so lightly. That's another thing I brought up in that program, talking about those points of Germany. And yeah, it really is all from the Jewish philosophies, values, and principles that all these things are found to be so acceptable, and we've all been conditioned to accept them so much. Theft, usury, white-collar crime, you know, banker manipulations treated as you know, a little slap on the wrist for Timmy, and then send him off to, not even send him off to military school. You know, that's too harsh compared to how these people are treated. Usually they get a golden parachute and just change their line of business or just live off their investments from that point on. Economic inequality is basically, the crux of it. You know, I have an interesting statistic here from one study. You could search these words and, you know, get your, you know, get some more elaboration on it yourself if you like. But we currently have 16.5 million millionaires. Now let's just think about that for a moment. We currently have 16.5 million millionaires. Let that set in for a bit. With 63.5 trillion in wealth collectively. So, you know, it's, if you really look at just these statistics, like a few of those I've mentioned here in the past few minutes, it doesn't take a genius in, well, economics, mathematics, physics, anything to be able to, you know, see what sort of areas we could look for some solutions, some ways of making systems work a little better for everyone. Okay. And meritocracy is, I think, once again here, as I keep showing, you know, a lot of what this is about. Regarding the situation in Spain, you know, it's maybe kind of hard to see how it relates to that, but I don't know. I see the, well, favoritism of all these economic migrants, you know, these foreign terrorists in all these countries posing as victims from lands of war and posing as younger and more victimized than they are usually. You know, these people are totally against a meritocracy, everything they stand for and the people supporting them, you know, and that's where a lot of these problems come in. I think a lot of the aggression here, possibly even toward the incident in Las Vegas, is related to some of these polarized differences in, you know, going along with nature or trying to work against it with communism, basically. You know, and a meritocracy is communism's biggest enemy. No matter how much you strip things down, that remains. I just want to see, folks, how much time I have left here. I had too many things. Might not get in completely here, considering I want to just do a cavalcade of current issues today. As far as just rounding off I was mentioning Trump related to economics as well. And, you know, those tax cuts, of course, aren't helping the people. In general, it's making the situations I mentioned worse. I wanted to mention some of the propaganda in the universities regarding the meritocracy. You know, we always see, I don't want to mention anything more economic, we always see a lot of projected devastation, you know. But, you know, it's claiming that there are going to be plunges in the stocks, like 40 to 70% plunge, and the Fed's tightening their grip in October in the U.S. here. And we see Australia, an article talking about their housing bubble. Most Australians couldn't afford another $100 increase in their mortgage. You know, there, for example, they're pointing out we're at our breaking point already. Middle class is all but dissolved. And they're saying, oh, this Obamacare that, you know, now Trump hasn't even changed at all yet or taken away even penalties yet. I mean, they're saying it'll be unaffordable for middle class in 94% of major cities by 2018. Everything's been doubling every year. The plans and the penalties, you know, you don't really get anything with the, you know, the amount that it has to be before it even kicks in. And so, yeah, you know, and of course, just the immigration competing for natives for jobs. It's all about meritocracy as well. These people favored, there's an article mentioning how American teenagers competing with immigrants for jobs. You know, they at the most 17, 18 year olds aren't able to have a job anymore. You know, that just pushes them further into taking a later start in life, you know, and that includes all aspects of their maturity, even intellectual maturity that eventually lends to our cause being put in a state of arrested development and more likely to fall into student loan debt, debt in general, right from the start, instead of, you know, getting jobs right out of high school, you know, for things that don't require a lot of training. But no, you know, affirmative action based, where they don't get jobs in most cases, and with this immigration and these programs, totally against the meritocracy there. But regarding education, we have this one article pointing out This is how American universities will look in the future if the left gets its way. I hate to use that term again, but for these purposes, you know, it mentions the objective of college presidents who face angry black students with no sense of decency or regard for academic freedom is not to protect academic freedom or maintain standards of decency on campus, nor, for that matter, do they appear genuinely interested in dealing with the causes of black alienation on campus. Their objective is appeasement, to put a temporary end to the disruption as cheaply as possible. And that is very true. You know, it's a temporary fix. These universities, you know, with a lot of the, I don't know how much manufacturing is in the U.S. anymore, but, you know, not worrying about anyone being qualified, you know, just worrying about your affirmative action quotas and your now immigration employment quotas being favored as well now, you know. It's completely off track from anything resembling a meritocracy. That's why communism always leads to the fall of a civilization, you know. But it's just ridiculous how ingrained in a lot of these people and their ways of thinking, that is, you know, these attitudes are. Excuse me for a second. Yes, and a lot of it comes down to, you know, just the politically correct power structure, you know, Jewish-controlled, communist. I mean, those things are tied, are joined at the hip, you know. Judaism and communism are one and the same. I really, at this point, am, you know, I don't think it's exaggerating. The amount of research I've done in all areas, Judaism and communism are part of a similar set of values, principles, ways of thinking of a people and their mind, and it is parasitic in nature. It cannot sustain indefinitely on its own. You know, we see this time and again, and this is really the heart of these issues. And well, just as far as similar related topics, with the meritocracy issue at the heart of all of this, this one college professor, Pennsylvania State University Brandywine professor Angela Putman, recently asserted in an academic paper that the notion, if I work hard, I can be successful, is merely a product of white ideology, reports Campus Reform. All right, believing in hard work is white ideology. It goes on. Angela Putman conducted a study to critique and examine ideologies within college students, quote unquote there, discourse that are foundational to whiteness. All right, well, that's the entire quote, actually. All right, my bad. Ideologies within college students' discourse that are foundational to whiteness. Her resulting conclusions, published on Thursday, was that meritocracy, or the belief that people should rise based on the fruits of their own labor, is a quote-unquote white ideology. In her mind, this quote-unquote white ideology is unfortunately widely accepted in academia. But Professor Putman argues that professors can change this quote-unquote ideology by teaching students, quote, how racism and whiteness function in various contexts, the powerful influence of systems and institutions, and the pervasiveness of whiteness ideologies within the United States, unquote. Putman believes that it is somehow a bad thing to teach students personal responsibility, emphasizing a collectivist mindset. Putman puts forth the idea that Americans are falsely socialized, socialized to believe that we got to where we are because of our own individual efforts, unquote. This is twisting around the balance I mentioned. You want your individuality. You want a collectivism for your race. You want that balance. But this is twisted logic, folks. And I just have to interrupt this article just to point this out. Okay, they're trying to trick people. But this Jewish communist Borg, truly Borg mentality. This ideology, she says, perpetuates whiteness and racism throughout society. Once students learn more about white ideology, they will hopefully, quote, resist perpetuating and reifying whiteness through their own discourse and interactions, unquote, and challenge systematic, quote, manifestations of racism and whiteness, unquote. Wow, isn't it great, folks, that we have someone out there challenging systematic manifestations of racism and whiteness? I feel so glad someone's doing that for us, don't you? Until students learn the hidden dangers of believing in the value of hard work and a positive attitude, whiteness ideologies may be reproduced through a general acceptance and unchallenging of norms, as well as through everyday discourse from a wide variety of racial positionalities. In the past, Professor Putman has put forth even more radical ideas to confront racism on her blog, whiteprivilegedoc.com. I'm sure we'll all have to check that out. Putman gave a detailed list how to fight systematic racism. Among her list of ideas were, number two, stop looking to people of color for information, guidance, and leadership. If you are confused, unsure what to say, overwhelmed with emotions, or just don't know what to do, try to figure it out on your own first. If that doesn't work, look to other whites involved in the fight for their help and guidance. It is not the responsibility of people of color to explain things to us and make us feel better. Oh, so yeah, so yeah, we are not to ask these, you know, what this is portraying it as is, you know, individuals of superior intellect among the colored races for assistance. You know, no, we would be burdening their superior lives too much. Number eight, another classic here, folks. Attend protests and rallies, but not if you aren't willing to be arrested. Now, this is gold here. Those who led the fight for civil rights, and those who continue the fight today believed so strongly in what they were fighting for that they were willing to be arrested or tear gassed or beaten by police if it came to that. I hope that protests and rallies remain peaceful. But when confrontation with law officers occurs, white people should be the ones at the front of the lines holding their ground and forcing officers to arrest them first. Let the media start writing headlines and talking on television about the countless white people arrested at the recent Black Lives Matter protest. And perhaps we might change the perception and shift the conversations people are having about this movement. The article concludes in pointing out, Putman did not say how she would be grading students in the future. According to her theory, grading based on their merits and test scores wouldn't be a perpetuation of white ideological privilege. Wow, folks, you know, truth really is stranger than fiction these days. We have another very amusing one here, and this is out of an investment watch blog. Universities are now rejecting all science research they deem to be politically incorrect, no matter how good the science. Originally from Natural News, my bad. This year is set to become the year where feelings take precedence over facts. Bath Spa University has drawn in a fair bit of attention over its decision to reject a proposal from one of its researchers, a psychotherapist named James Caspian, apparently performing a study on regret-driven reverse gender assignment surgery was a bit too much for the university to handle and might even blemish its reputation on social media. you know, we can't let anyone know about reverse gender assignment based on regret over the original sex change. Oh, no. You know, the fundamental reason given was that it might cause criticism of the research on social media, and criticism of the research would be criticism of the university. And they also added, it was better not to offend people, Caspian explained. Yes, you read that right. Bath Spa University did indeed just dismiss a study proposal on detransitioning because it would potentially hurt feelings. Never mind that Caspian fought for his case in a reasonable fashion, arguing that the research was more needed than ever due to the increasing population of people who were regretting and were even traumatized by their surgery. Nevertheless, never mind that Caspian himself spoke with a genital reconstructive surgeon who had carried out several reversals in a single year alone. Caspian even noticed how getting people to talk openly about their experiences proved to be difficult. This was only made him more determined. This had only made him more determined to carry out the study, though. He had made it a point to include individuals who had transitioned to men, then returned to living as women without going under the knife again. But of course, Bath Spa University torpedoed Caspian's proposal with a second thought. The university had also declined to comment. All queries on the matter until the internal investigations have concluded. And there was a really good take out of it out of another source as well. But yeah, you know, I mean, this person is, I don't know where the one part was, but, you know, he's mentioning part of his body. He was a man and then, you know, transitioned to a woman, went back to being a man. The one and you know, just that part of his body will never be back. You know, he killed that sacred gift of nature, and yeah, you know, I mean, a meritocracy would have a good night, folks.
Great job presenting to you cutting-edge and hard-hitting content every day of the week. They do this all for free, because they care about getting the truth out there and ensuring that we, and future generations, have a future worth living for. Our enemies have an endless supply of money to finance their operations, but we're able to work wonders working on a shoestring budget. If you appreciate a host's content, visit their archive page and find out how to support them, or even send a nice thank you note. We all appreciate it. Thank you for your consideration. Now back to the show.